Welcome, everybody, to episode 254 of the Metabolist 2 podcast, featuring me, Ben.
And I am David, and we are kicking off with this podcast our retrospective look at one of our favorite Doctor Who actors, Ian Martyr, who played Harry Sullivan.
The redoubtable Harry Sullivan, yeah.
Yeah, and we'll talk about his first role on the series, Carnival of Monsters, but before we get into that, we'll just talk about his background leading up to his time in Doctor Who.
Yeah, of course, because we are diligent and expert podcasters, we have a bunch of new information for you. I think this is new information that you will not find anywhere else apart from on this very podcast.
Yeah,
well, I guess you will find it somewhere else because we found it.
Yes.
But the internet is crying out for this information. Yeah. Wikipedia is like, nope, don't know what school he went to, don't know what he did. we have all that now.
We went to the primary sources.
It's primary source material, yes. You won't see it on any other Doctor Who styly interviews in Doctor Who magazine or Wikipedia or any of that kind of malarkey. Oh, Toby Haddock, for instance, doesn't know this stuff, man.
So
Toby?
What we found is that the internet is wrong, basically. Ian Martyr did not finish his time at Oxford in 1969. He finished 3 years earlier in 1966.
In 1966, exactly. So if you read anything that is written down on the internet about Ian and his time at Oxford University, will see him graduating in 69, and we have found that to be entirely incorrect by going to a primary source. David, will you please elucidate?
So our primary source is St. Edmund Hall Magazine, which is from St. Edmund Hall College in Oxford University, and we found his matriculation and his graduation.
This is base level Doctor Who research here. This is Toby Toby Haddock stuff. And I hope, Toby, if you're listening, as I'm sure you are, that you appreciate the effort that we're putting in to bring up some new unknown information about Ian Martyr. Absolutely scintillating.
And the activities that he did as a student at Oxford.
As a member of the John Oldham Society, which we discover, I mean, who knew, is the College Dramatic Society of St. Edmund Hall. St. Edward Hall.
So let's step back and paint the picture. Ian Martyr was born on the 28th of October in 1944. His parents were Donald and Helen Martyr. His middle name is Don, so he's named, I'm assuming, in part after his father. And he went, as a child, to Beckenham and Penge Grammar School, which is in England. It's currently been renamed to Langley Park School for Boys in Beckenham, Greater London. And so he graduated in 1963.
Carey Blyton was a graduate of Beckenham and Penge Grammar School.
Yeah.
As was Bill Wyman and other people. But no one interesting was a contemporary of Ian's, I don't think, at this point. It's a grammar school, obviously, so it's for smart kids. Mm-hmm. But getting into Oxford, that's
he got a scholarship.
Got a scholarship to St. Edward's Hall, which is pretty impressive, to be honest. Scholarships are not handed out willy-nilly at Oxford. They are handed out to the smart kids. And he was a smart kid, and he was going to St. Edmund's Hall reading English language and literature.
So since you're an Oxford grad, tell us about Teddy Hall, St. Edmund's Hall.
St. Edmund's Hall, Teddy's Hall, it's a small college. It's right in the middle. It is surrounded by some walls. You can't really get into it. I didn't really know anyone who was at St. Edmund's Hall, to be honest. Though I guess Stuart Lee was at St. Edmund's Hall, so that's cool. A contemporary of mine who, of course, became a very famous comedian. But it's a small college. It's a very old college. I mean, all Oxford colleges are quite old.
Well, this one is founded in 1278, so it's been around a while.
Yeah. I mean, every college has, like, no, we're the oldest. Certainly my college, Worcester, has the oldest buildings. It was founded by the Duke of Gloucester, who then became Richard III. founded right. my college as Gloucester Hall, but then it became Worcester College in the mid-17th century. Anyway, St. Edmund's Hall, it's a small college, not particularly characterful to my mind. Mm-hmm. But, again, we discover that one of the contemporaries of Ian, if I can call him, Ian Marta, Ian, at St. Edmund's Hall was Terry Jones, who I think was just a year above him. Terry of Monty Python fame. It doesn't appear that Jones acted much. I guess he was too busy hanging out with Michael Palin and plotting to revolutionize comedy by becoming Monty Python. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I've not got a huge amount to say about Teddy Hall, to be honest. It's a college at Oxford.
But hitherto unknown that Ian Marter went to St. Edmund's Hall. So that
exactly.
New fact.
If you go to Ian's Wikipedia page, it simply says he graduated from Oxford. And I think as any right thinking person will realize that that's pretty useless information. What you need to know is what college he graduated from. Mm-hmm. That is always the key fact when you're talking about Oxbridge. And, of course, due to our excellence in finding things out on the internet, we discovered that it was St. Edmund's Hall. So that is, he's not listed on the St. Edmund's Hall Wikipedia page as a cultural graduate of the college. And his college is not listed on his own page. So this is new information for everybody.
So he matriculated, became a student in 1964, and he studied English language and literature. He read for 3 years, and he was heavily involved in drama, not surprisingly so. And so, Ben, could you please explain how the three terms work at Oxford?
The school year at Oxford consists of 3 8-week terms. So you're not actually at Oxford very much during a year, just 24 weeks or so, which is fine, I guess. The first term, the kind of winter term, is the Michaelmas. The kind of spring term is the Hillary term. And then the final term, the kind of early summer term, where you have your, typically you'll have examinations. Certainly the English school will be having examinations in that term, is the Trinity term. Mm. So, I mean, that's basically how it works. And you know, you go up for 8 weeks and then you do a bunch of stuff and you go back down again. I can't speak for what it was like in the 60s, since I was at Oxford in the 80s. that dates me, which is... was only 20 years before, you know, anyway. It's pretty intense, to be honest. 8 weeks is not a long time to learn a bunch of stuff and then regurgitate that stuff to a bunch of people who've been studying that stuff for years, i.e. your tutors. Mm-hmm. A lot of people tend to, especially if they have other interests other than their academic interests, or if they have interests that are not involved going into the city or becoming, you know, a politician or whatever, will tend to neglect their actual studies and concentrate on what they're really passionate about. And it does seem that one of the things that Ian was absolutely passionate about was acting. Mm-hmm. In some ways, it's a little bit strange that he didn't go to drama college.
Right.
I suspect, you know, he was a smart kid. From, you know, London suburb, in a grammar school. I suspect he was pushed to take the Oxbridge entrance exam and then got in. Again, certainly in my day, and I think certainly back in the 60s, the entrance exam to get into Oxford takes place a lot earlier than your other entrance exams. So you can take the Oxford entrance exam, go for an interview, get accepted into Oxford, and still have at least another 2 semesters terms of school, of high school, to finish. And I suspect that's what probably happened to him. You know, whether there was some parental pressure, that's not uncommon. You know, if you come from a family that's, you know, not gone to a high-level university before, if you get into Oxford, basically you're going to have to go whether you want to go or not, whether you might actually rather go to drama school. Mm-hmm. What is interesting, and this is something that I'm going to credit David for doing all the primary research here, what is interesting is that basically almost as soon as he got there, in the Trinity term, so the last term of his first year, he produced and directed a production of John Osborne's Luther, so a historical, you know, political play about
Martin Luther.
about Martin Luther Vandross, Martin Luther King, I don't know, Luther from Out of the Television.
The Bible guy.
The guy, the nailing the things
German.
To the door guy. Yeah. Yeah, the Protestant guy. Yeah. I've actually never read or seen a production of John Osborne's Luther, but I assume it's one of those kind of, you know, like, what's the play about the Salem witches, you know, that American play?
The Crucible?
Yeah, it's like The Crucible. It's like you look at a subject, you look at contemporary politics through the lens of something that happened in the past, and that's what I suspect John Osborne's Luther is. Anyway, I mean, that's kind of amazing. This is his first year. He is, you know, supposed to be studying to get a good grade, a good degree in English literature. But what he's doing is he is acting and producing a play instead.
Right. So in Michael Musk terms, he was in either he starred or directed the cast of Fire in Heaven for the drama Cuppers. And then the Trinity term, he directs and produces Luther. And do you have the notes up from the John Oldham Society?
I do, yes. I'll just explain what Cuppers is. So Cuppers is a generic term for a competition, basically. Mm-hmm. So you get Cuppers in a whole bunch of different things, mm-hmm. mainly in kind of sport. But there also are competitions for drama. And to come second in drama Cuppers for Fire in Heaven, Michaelmas term, that's pretty impressive, basically. I mean,
mm-hmm. In your first year.
In your first year. In the Michaelmas term, which is your first term up at Oxford, your first time you've ever been away from home, you are, you know, 19 years old. That's pretty impressive stuff. That's a pretty impressive acting achievement. Do you want me to read out the report from?
Read out the report from the John Oldham Society for Trinity term for Ian Martyr's production of Luther, please.
Yes. Okay. So this is the John Oldham Society, which is the dramatic society for Teddy Hall. John Oldham was a poet and playwright who was at St. Edmund's Hall, I think, in the 17th century. Anyway, so, and I'll read this. As no report has been received from the officers of the society, the editors of the magazine, this being the St. Edmund's Hall annual magazine, have been obliged to improvise lest a distinguished record shall pass into oblivion. The event of the year was the production of John Osborne's Luther in the Playhouse, in Trinity term. Now, this is the Oxford Playhouse. Mm-hmm. This is the main theatre of Oxford. It's not part of the university, but the university has access in it to do important productions. The production was directed by Ian Martyr, and the name part was taken by Nick Elliott. Although both these and the majority of the supporting cast were in their first year, the whole performance had a polish and maturity which won admiration. More than one critic remarked that it forced one to judge it by a professional rather than amateur standards. Those who saw it will long remember the dignity and poise with which Nick Elliott played the great reformer. If he did not quite succeed in getting across his greatness as a religious genius, this was probably much more John Osborne's fault than his. He certainly gave unity and life to a play which tends to break up into a series of episodes and which tails off on a diminuendo note. Among the smaller parts, David Dodd brought Luther's coarse-mouthed, wine-swilling father to life with relish, and he was ably abetted by John Dodgson in the role of Lucas. Roland Oliver, cultivating broad appeal rather than fitness, brought the house down with his interpretation of Tetzel, while Michael Scannell and Michael Morrow presented with subtlety and insight the very different types of Renaissance churchmen symbolized by Cataghan and Pope Leo respectively. One of the most sympathetic performances, although at times his voice was so low to be almost inaudible, was that of Nigel Thorpe as Staupitz. Although Luther must be reckoned the most noteworthy college production of the year, and for once merit was recognized by gratifyingly full houses. So basically a triumph.
A triumph, yes, indeed. For would they be called a freshman since you only have 3 years?
Yeah, they'd be freshmen. They'd be freshers, yeah.
Yeah. So you've been at Oxford, St. Edmund Hall, for 3 terms now. This is the final of the spring term, and you have pretty high acclaim as the man who directed this full house performance at the Oxford Playhouse.
Yeah, and I think the other thing to say is that, you know, I can't speak for how popular Luther was was as a play. It was written in 1961. John Osborne, again, famous playwright, you know, the Angry Young Men, Look Back in Anger, you know, very big in the 50s. You know, it's a relatively recent play. If they're producing this in you know, 60, 62, 63, and it shows that Ian Marta is reading, if not actually going to London to see this play, which basically obviously opened in London, you know, he's reading plays, he's reading contemporary drama and wanting to put that drama on at his college, and not only doing that at the college, but actually producing a performance that is good enough to be at the Oxford Playhouse.
Mm-hmm, indeed.
Just actually, here's some incidental nonsense. Looking up the John Osborne play Luther on Wikipedia, the English Stage Company cast for a production at the Royal Court, which is where the play premiered, had Julian Glover in it.
Very interesting.
Everyone knows who Julian Glover is. And actually, sorry, again, it's not a play I know much about, but the Royal Court Theatre is where the most radical and political plays have been traditionally presented in London. So this isn't some kind of staid historical play about, you know, Martin Luther. This is a very political contemporary play. And the fact that Ian Marta was picking up on this play relatively soon after it was premiered in London, and
just three years later,
and representing in Oxford is really very, very impressive.
Commendable.
Yeah.
And then so his next year, 64 to 65, he's in another play, The Sport of My Mad Mother. And then he's also the secretary of the John Oldham Society for the Michaelmas and Hillary terms, where they produced The Public Eye by Peter Schaeffer.
I'm just going to interject again quickly. So The Sport of My Mad Mother and Public Eye were, again, both premiered at the Royal Court in London. So, again, these are very, very contemporary plays. So this is a group of people, you know, in some ways led by Ian Marta, who are not interested in doing Shakespeare or old plays, you know, Noel Coward, et cetera. Mm-hmm. They're interested in is doing contemporary, up-to-date drama.
Mm-hmm. And then for their spring term, Ian Marta was no longer secretary, but St. Edmund's Hall did a co-production with Queen College, the Egglesfield Players, of Anton Chekhov's The Cherry Orchard. And so members of the John Oldham Society, along with Ian Marta, also appeared with that, along with many young women who, in this day and age, in the 64, 65 time frame, were guests of the Oxford University. So there's a half dozen young women from the community, from various St. Anne's, Somerville, St. Hugh's.
So both St. Anne's and Somerville are all women colleges.
Right.
So basically, you know, if you're in an all male college, and I think at this point St. Edmund's was all male, you'd bus in girls from other from other colleges if you needed female parts, which is, you know, makes a lot of sense, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, I was Hamlet when I was at Oxford in a production at New College, but the production was of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead. So basically, the character of Hamlet had about three lines.
That's perfect.
I wasn't at New College. I was at Worcester, but I knew people at New College and said, like, why don't you come along and be Hamlet for a bit? So, I mean, it is generally okay if you're from another college to go and act at a different college, but not in a major production.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I'd also say that Queen's College is kind of next door to St. Edmund's Hall. Yep. So it's a short walk between those two colleges. Very short walk.
Mm-hmm. And then following on in 65, 66, the next year.
In Michaelmas, yep.
Martyr was co-lead in Waiting for Godot.
Which is, again, pretty extraordinary. I mean, that's a major play. It's a very contemporary play, modernist play. And he is either Vladimir or Estragon. So he's either one of the two main characters in a play. And that's, again, pretty impressive for someone in their early 20s.
Mm-hmm. Again, that fairly recent play at the time in 65, Waiting for Godot, was only like 12 years old as
right.
a play by
right.
then. It's not the stodgy piece that it is now. It's relatively contemporary drama.
Very contemporary drama, yeah.
There's a little bit more in the June 1966 issue of the Hartford College magazine. Waiting for Godot, which was performed in the Oxford Playhouse in the third week of the Michaelmas term, was an unqualified success. All opinions of the performance were very favorable, and the outcome was one of the most successful college productions ever staged in the Playhouse. The cast consisted of Ian Martyr, John Dodgson, Roger Sherman, and Barry Taylor. So I'm guessing if there's two casts or two characters, they had...
They switched off a bit.
They switched off nights, so to speak.
Yeah, well, there you go. You're taking Toby Haddock's crown from him now.
No. Yes, this is far too much information. The bootleg edition of Toby Haddock's esteemed podcast. Yes, there we go.
There you go. Oh, excellent. Okay, back to the subject. This is the subject. We're talking about Ian Martyr.
Which brings us to, I guess it's not a big revelation because this is an IMDb, but Hollywood swept into Oxford and Ian Martyr was in a movie with Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor.
Richard Burton was at Oxford University and he was at Exeter, which is, of course, where all Welsh people go. That's not a joke. It's where Welsh people go. So there you go. He acted with Ian Martyr. He's the man.
Yeah, and I guess what happened is Burton returned to Oxford, his alma mater, with his wife, Elizabeth Taylor, and they got the students who were in drama to help them put on their version of Dr. Faustus, which was then filmed and released as a movie. Ian Martyr played Pride and Emperor. Played a couple roles in that,
which is available to watch on Amazon if you want to pay money, which I haven't done yet, and apparently it's not very good. But it'd be great. I at some point I thought it was free on Tubi, so I was excited. But when it comes back to Tubi, I'll definitely be watching that and seeing how Ian does as the Emperor in Dr. Faustus, a play which I have almost no knowledge at all of. Don't know how big the part the Emperor is.
It's small. It's a small one. I think all the students are small.
I think it's small. But anyway, I mean, good for him.
Yeah, so it's generally panned that the...
The
film is described
as
a permanent record of the stage production that Burton put on at Oxford, and the reviews from the British press were less than enthusiastic, with critics commenting, quote, a sad example of university drama at its worst, with an uninspired Burton walking through the parts.
Oh, well,
so,
there you go.
So, yeah, it...
But Burton had been out of Oxford for a long time at that point, and was a big star, and Elizabeth Taylor, I think they'd just come off doing Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf at that point. But, you know, they were big stars and it was very nice of them, I guess, to come back to Oxford and do a production for everybody and get it filmed. But there you go. Yeah.
But at age 22, he has a Hollywood credit.
Yeah.
And so in later that same year, 1966, he graduates from St. Edmund's Hall
third class degree.
So perhaps he spent a little too much time with the drama in retrospect.
Yeah, so there are basically four classes of degrees you get from Oxford, at least certainly when I was there, and I think it was similar in the 60s. You get a first, which is awesome. You get a 2-1, which is what you're kind of supposed to get. If you don't get a 2-1, it's like, I got a 2-1. It was a high 2-1, I'm told. It was almost a first, my tutor told me, which is very nice of him to cheer me up like that. And then there's a 2-2, which is slightly less good than a 2-1. And then there's a third. And basically a third means you probably were wasting your time and you probably needn't have bothered. It's not a good thing to walk away with. And usually what happens with a third is that someone has basically not done the work. And when it comes to finals, which are pretty intense, I mean, my finals, and I think the English finals are similar, it's a week worth of examinations, and you do 6 hours of examinations over 5 days, with a break in the middle of the day for 6 hours a day for 5 days, and you're examined on everything that you've been working on for the previous 3 years. It's pretty brutal, and it really, if you haven't been paying attention, And if you haven't revised the work that you've done in the previous 3 years, say, for instance, you were too busy being in a play which was being filmed with Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor, then you're going to walk away with the third, which is going to be disappointing for you and for your family and for your tutors, and may mean that when you are interviewed in relatively soon after that happened, you may not want to talk about it hugely.
No, and I think we have a very good explanation why Ian Martyr never corrected the record very much.
He probably was like, I kind of balls that one up. I went to Oxford. It was great. But actually what I'm really interested in is talking about how I then got a job at the Old Vic and became a proper actor.
And so let's leave Oxford behind. And then I'm going to quote from a DWM article from Richard Marston, which is one, I think, the only or the earliest interview with Ian Martyr. And I'll begin. Ian Martyr's career started after he completed his university studies and was looking for something permanent to do. Ian, I didn't really make the decision to act. It was more of an accident. I went along to a Bristol Old Vic audition that I'd been told about without a proper appointment. Incredibly, they had a spare spot available, so I was allowed to do my chosen pieces. And to my amazement, I was subsequently offered a job with the company as an acting assistant stage manager, which is literally a jack of all trades. I was very surprised, although I had acted in school and then at university, I didn't have any specific plans in that direction. It just seemed to happen. As I had no proper drama training, I learned a great deal quite quickly. After 3 months as being a dog's body, the grander term of being an acting ASM, I was lucky enough to be taken into the acting company itself. I personally feel that there's no better training available than to be thrown in and forced to experience everything firsthand. Thus, I found it extremely valuable. So, it seems to me like he slunk out of Oxford.
Yeah, he's really downplay. This is his interview. What's the date on it? Do you know what the date of the DWM?
September 1984.
It's almost like Doctor Who Weekly.
DWM 93.
Right. So this is a really early interview. He's really downplaying the fact that basically all he did at Oxford was act and came away with a third because that's all he did at Oxford. Mm-hmm. That's sad to me that, you know, he feels the need to downplay his really kind of impressive achievements in acting at Oxford.
As a non-drama student,
obviously, because you can't study drama at Oxford. It's English is what you have to do if you're interested in acting. Actually, to be honest, if you're interested in acting, you should probably go to drama school. But anyway, I mean,
he might have wanted to go to drama school.
Exactly.
And he had sat for the exams and got in
a
scholarship.
He was a smart kid, and everyone was super excited in Penge that he was off to Oxford. And you really get sort of the impression of a kid who was trapped into going to a university that he possibly didn't really want to go to, who really achieved very strongly in what was his actual chosen field, which was acting, came out with everybody kind of mad at him for not really getting the grades he needed to get to make it a worthwhile activity, and then downplaying the achievements that he had at the university as he actually becomes what he really always wanted to do, which was to be an actor.
Mm-hmm. And so yeah. The internet has him leaving Oxford in 69. Well, he left in 66. And we have some playbills that we've uncovered from his time at Bristol Old Vic. And the earliest one we have is from 1967. He's listed in the cast for Treasure Island.
So he's straight in. I mean, you know, he's within the interview, you know, he was completed university studies, looking for something to do. I didn't really make the decision to act. You know, he graduated summer of 66. 67, he's already acting.
Mm-hmm. Well, he said only he was 3 months as assistant stage manager. So
he
probably in 66 got a job at Bristol Old Vic. And by 67, he's already in the playbills.
Right. True. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So then in 68, he was in Juno and the Paycock. And then in 69, Conduct Unbecoming. 1970, a Noel Coward play, Hay Fever. And then 1971, Peter Luke play Hadrian the Seventh. So he's part of the regular company for Bristol Old Vic.
And I think the interesting thing to say here is that your Bristol Old Vic is, you know, it's important theatre. It's not in London, obviously. Mm-hmm. So it's actually quite some way away from where he grew up in Penge. But the interesting thing to me is looking at this list of playbills that David's uncovered. This is the kind of traditional, to me, and probably to Ian as well, pretty dull provincial theatre that is being produced. So, you know, this is all stuff from the I guess Treasure Island, you know, from the 1900s, you know. From the 1800s. You know, this is old fashioned theatre that he's doing. Really, to me, I mean, you know, he's doing Noel Coward. This seems to me to be a really sharp contrast to the kind of radical ish theatre that he was interested in doing when he was at Oxford.
Yes. And in this time period, when he was in Bristol, he got married in 1968 to Rosemary Hayland, and they had two sons, Rupert Martyr and Toby Martyr. And I think the youngest was born, I think, in 1971. So his getting married coincides with this time at Bristol Old Vic.
Right. I'm just looking at these playbills. I mean, you know, we've got Paul Darrow. We've got Jeremy Irons. There's some interesting people that John Pennington that he was acting with. You know, interesting for us because these are people who become, you know, certainly someone like Darrow becomes someone who is in Gareth Hunt, I see.
Stephen Moore.
Blake himself is in this list. So, yeah, all interesting stuff. Do we know whether his sons are still around?
I believe so. I wasn't able to find anything about Rupert, but Toby Martyr is a film editor TV editor in the UK. He currently has active credits from this year.
Oh, interesting.
He seems to do either historical, contemporary dramatizations of political events and that type of stuff. But he is involved in the industry one way or another. I wasn't able to get anything specific about his eldest, Rupert.
Right. Okay, interesting stuff.
So in 1971, this coincides with Ian Martyr's probably getting sick of regional rep theater, and he has a small part in a horror film.
The Abominable Dr. Fibes, an absolute cult classic. Everyone loves The Abominable Dr. Fibes. With Vincent Price as the eponymous abominable doctor. and it's a doozy. I think he plays up a police inspector or something, doesn't he? Something.
Haven't seen it. I'm relying on your knowledge of
goodness.
British horror.
I am going to quickly. This one kind of passed me by slightly. I'm just going to quickly fire up my internet machine.
That's fine. We'll just cut all this. So
we'll
this isn't live.
Fix it in post. Ian Martyr as third policeman in The Abominable Dr. Fibes. I have just purchased Dr. Fibes on a very nice new Blu-ray from Arrow. And I've not actually had time to sit down and watch it yet. And I actually got rid of my DVD. So I have not been able to watch Dr. Fibes recently. I'm looking forward to getting a... God, how much do you know? What do you want to know about my life? I'm saving up to buy a multi-standard Blu-ray player is what I'm doing. Mm. My Dr. Fibes is a Region B. He is in Dr. Fibes. Not very much, I have to say. He's sort of standing around in the background. And for people who like things that I like, I would recommend Dr. Fibes very much. It was directed by the guy, one of the directors of did a lot of Avengers. So it's a very kind of stylish, stylized director. Went on to direct the only Michael Moorcock, Jerry Cornelius movie, The Last Man on Earth. An excellent film. And it's always a joy to... he's gone.
Yep. I watched the trailer last night.
Oh, you watched the trailer? Oh, yeah.
It's just wacky that Dr. Fibes is drinking through a conduit in his neck.
And... Oh, yeah, yeah. And Vulnavia, his servant, and it's full of character actors who, mm-hmm. who you know, that everyone will recognize from Doctor Who and other kind of British TV and movies. Absolute cult film. Well worth watching. If you haven't seen it, I definitely recommend watching The Abominable Doctor Vibes. Plus, you will see In Marta walk across the screen.
Indeed, indeed. And roughly in the same time period, in 1970, possibly at the same time he was filming Dr. Phibes, he auditioned to play Mike Yates. And he withdrew his name from consideration when he thought it would be conflicting with some of his other commitments, probably theater, but could have had a very different unit family with Ian Martyr as Mike Yates.
I mean, presumably it was conflicting with Hadrian the Seventh, right?
It's hard to say. It could be conflicting with the Abominable Dr. Phibes, too.
I guess, yeah. Though, I mean...
I mean, we don't have a complete record of everything that he's doing.
And actually, I haven't... Obviously, it's a novel. I wasn't aware that Hadrian the Seventh was also a play, too. So... I'm not mm-hmm. entirely sure when it was written as a play, to be honest. Let me just take a look. Because maybe I'm extemporizing my ideas, you know, that he's interested in interesting drama rather than kind of boring drama. Peter Luke is adapted it. Yeah, I can't find when it was adapted. Opened in New York City, January 8th, 1969.
So it was a relatively recently.
Relatively new play, mm-hmm. which again maybe fits in with our, you know, post psychoanalyzing of Ian Martyr as someone who is like, you know, he's been in Hay Fever, he's been in Treasure Island, he's been in Juno and the Paycock, and like at last it's a contemporary play. Shall I do TV and be in like a silly genre sci-fi show? Or shall I be in Hadrian the Seventh? I'm going to be in Hadrian the Seventh.
Well, so his audition was in 1970 for Mike Yates. So, you know, it's hard to say. And again, since we have found dates surrounding Ian Martyr a little fuzzy and not necessarily trustworthy on,
true.
On secondary sources such as Wikipedia. So what is known to be true is that Barry Letts remembered him and then cast him much later, several years later, in Carnival of Monsters, which we'll get to.
Eventually.
But in this time period, Shannon Sullivan notes on Ian Martyr, says he also worked as a teacher and a milkman to help make ends meet. And when we imagine that with two young sons on the a growing family, that he was scrounging up for cash, and maybe that was also a motivation to get into that rich TV money.
yeah. I wonder where they were living as a family, whether mm-hmm. they were living in Bristol, if that's where he was primarily working, or I don't know. Interesting.
Well, but I think certainly by 1972, it seems like he had moved to London because he started to get regular television roles. Earliest role that IMDb has is as a police driver for one episode of a serial called Holly. But then he started getting regular work in Crown Court. And I doubt that was something you were watching as a nipper.
Oh, Crown Court? What? Crown Court is the greatest.
Really?
For people who are not aware of Crown Court, I'm not sure how long it went on.
It was on ITV, right? It wasn't a BBC program. And it had 11 series, so it went from 72 to 84.
72 to 84. It was on during the day, so it wasn't a show that was really aimed at anyone, I don't think. And I used to watch it when I was at boarding school. It was like, it's lunchtime. What's on the telly? I'm bored. It's Crown Court. And Crown Court it's got the most amazing theme tune. I'm not going to sing it because it won't sound as good for me. But it's just so evocative. And it's basically, it's a courtroom. So there's absolutely minimal actors. There's like, maybe there's a judge. It'd be a different judge each week. The same judges mm-hmm. would turn up.
A rotating cast,
exactly. But then you get like a defense barrister and a prosecuting barrister, a defendant, a jury. Okay, bish bosh, job done. Mm-hmm. And it was brilliant. It was basically every day they would do a court case, and not a, you know, obviously a made up one, not a real one. And it would just be a kind of a dramatic, you know, 12 Angry Men style TV show, which was on basically like every day. And I loved it. And for people who, I'm sure it's not really available to stream in any kind of meaningful way. Maybe it's on disc. Maybe Network released it. But for people who are really interested in British character actors, as we all are, because we're fans of Doctor Who, it's an absolute essential watch. 879 episodes, it says here, on 11 series. It's an absolutely essential watch because basically everybody's in it.
Yeah, Michael Sheard, Ben Kingsley, John LeMessurier, you know, Peter Jeffrey.
Peter Capaldi's in it.
Pat Troughton was in
Brian Cox, Ben Sir Ben Kingsley, as I think we're supposed to call him.
Zaphod Beeblebrox himself, Mark Wing Davey. I mean, who's who of Doctor Who and British actors.
A treasure trove, absolute treasure trove. I'm just trying to scroll down and see whether it's been released in any way. 8 volumes of stories have been released by Network DVD. I mean, the problem is, I mean, Network went out of business, which was an absolute crying shame. We're getting off topic, but yes, I've not thought about Crown Court for many, many years. But yeah, I loved it as a teenager. I thought it was absolutely great. And you'll see a lot of amazing British character actors that, you know, Doctor Who fans will recognize will be in episodes of Crown Court.
So yeah, Ian Martyr's first appearance in Crown Court will prove you correct on that. It was in 1972 for a 3-episode court drama called Regina versus Lord, or R versus Lord, where he played Constable Forbush, and his boss was Detective Superintendent Brotherton, played by none other than Christopher Benjamin.
There you go.
So his first brush with who-ness is, I guess, by that time, Christopher Benjamin had been coming off of Doctor Who and the Silurians. So the select or small community of actors who did television in the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, Ian Martyr's already has kind of a foot in that community.
Absolutely.
And then his next Crown Court role, a new character, he's playing it, Quentin Ingrams, who's a QC, Queen's Counsel, a barrister for the Crown. Right. And this character, Quentin Ingrams, that Martyr portrayed, he would reprise the role at least 3 additional times. So that's that rotating cast of characters. He would play QC and Quentin Ingrams prosecuting for the Crown.
I'm wondering, actually, though, where it says 3 episodes, I think that could be the 3-episode block of the single case.
Yes, it is. It is 3 episodes in a story, but he also reprised his character, Quentin Ingrams, at least 3 times in Crown Court. And so, total of at least 3 stories.
Right. Oh, really? Okay.
So, as Quentin Ingrams, he played the first Crown Court serial. It was The Dogs Part 1, The Dogs Part 2, and Dogs Part 3. Interestingly, Cheryl Hall, who played Sherna in Carnival of Monsters, is also in that. So this is 1973, which is also the year of Carnival of Monsters. So
there we go.
Ian Martyr during this time is doing guest cast roles for various serials on ITV and BBC. So Barry Letts remembers him for the auditioning of Mike Yates. And then come 1973, the calendars work, I guess, and he gets cast. So we have his first role in Doctor Who. What do you make of Ian Martyr as Lieutenant John Andrews, first mate of the SS Bernice?
Oh, goodness. Rewinding my brain back to when I saw this when it was first broadcast, my memories of Carnival of Monsters is the monsters were awesome, and the bit where they went to the ship was boring, and I wanted them to get back to the Drashigs. I didn't really enjoy the Interminer scenes as well. I thought that bit was dull, and I thought, you know, the kind of showman patter was kind of irritating and childish.
Stuff with Borg and Cherna.
Exactly. I didn't find that to be sophisticated at all. Yeah. And I just wanted to get back to Monsters and Drashigs. My main memory, I think, of John Andrews, the Ian Martyr character, was that he seemed like an okay chap.
Yeah, I thought it was convincing of the character that he was playing at the time, and he plays a romantic lead. I think.
Of course.
Really is kind of a proto Harry Sullivan, Lieutenant.
Absolutely. Yep.
Lieutenant
yep.
Harry Sullivan in many ways.
He's got a strong jaw. He has kind of thick, black, wavy hair. He can certainly do Empire Posh. Absolutely perfect. Yeah. I mean, that is a great role for him. And he kind of shows off his strengths as an actor. I mean, sadly, I wasn't going to the theater when he was in theater. So I really only know his work from movies and TV, and he wasn't really in movies that much. So it's the theater that we would have seen him in, and obviously both of us are too young to do that. But he stood out. I mean, maybe he stands out in that episode now in that story now because I know who it is.
Yeah, because it is kind of a minor role.
Oh, yeah, it's a minor role. As preparing for this podcast, I mean, I try to kind of cast my mind back and like, okay, do I remember that character? And the character did stick in my mind slightly. It's like, okay, that's a good character. He's being nice to Joe. Joe is brilliant. I love her. Therefore, I love this person. And those are my kind of 9-year-old memories of seeing Ian. And did you already know Harry Sullivan at that point?
Yeah, yeah. So I came to Carnival of Monsters backwards. I had already seen Ian Martyr as Harry Sullivan for probably at least 2 or 3 repeat seasons on KTCA, the public television station in St. Paul, Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Right.
And so when I saw Ian as John Andrews, Lieutenant John Andrews, it seemed pretty much the same role with just
same
a slight
character.
Difference,
yeah, yeah.
with just minor differences.
Yeah, no, and I think, I think there's, you know, it's become a weird tradition, I think, in New Who that, you know, you have a bit character who then becomes a major character. You know, I'm thinking Martha Jones and Martha Jones's cousin who worked at Torchwood, apparently.
Or just this last season with Virata Seth, who's in Boom and now is coming back as a companion.
Yeah, which I think seems to be kind of deliberate now certainly with RTD, which is fine. You know, I mean, if he wants to kind of do that, then I think that's fine. There's obviously, when you find a good actor, you want to stick with a good actor. I think it's indicative. I mean, as you point out, you know, he was auditioned by Barry Letts to be Mike Yates. Barry files this excellent actor's name away in his Barry Letts head, because that's kind of his job. And he's, okay, well, you know, I need an upstanding naval officer, merchant marine officer. I'll put him in Carnival of Monsters, which is obviously something that, you know, I had a hand in directing as well. And then when it comes to Robot, yeah, I'm helping the new crew establish themselves. I'm going to put forward Ian's name to be Harry Sullivan.
And also, after he had finished filming this, he got incredibly sick. And so one thing we haven't mentioned yet is Ian Martyr had diabetes. Type 1 diabetes, and he had health issues. And so whatever it took to film on Carnival Monsters on location, on a
ship in the Thames Estuary, yeah.
That was being towed for scrap is certainly not the nicest vessel. He had a health scare, got incredibly sick, and then returned to guest starring in as Quentin Ingrams in Crown Court for a few more appearances.
I mean, I think it's worth pointing out. I don't know, you know, the history of the treatment of diabetes on the National Health, but, you know, it's only relatively recent that relatively recently that diabetes is not sort of a death sentence. And my memory of diabetics is from watching TV shows in the 1970s where, you know, it's like, there's a diabetic, we've got to get them some insulin, otherwise they'll die. You know, it was a standard kind of dramatic cliche of the, you know, the hijacked plane that's got a diabetic on it. I think it was pretty stressful then. I think that having to inject yourself with insulin on a regular basis was pretty stressful. I think it still is pretty stressful, to be honest. But, you know, the relative primitive nature of the National Health Service in the 1960s, 1950s, 1960s, 1970s for Ian, I'm not surprised. And I think also, you know, the lifestyle of the actor, which there's a lot of irregular meals, there's a lot of heavy drinking. It's difficult to get work and do work with a major condition like diabetes, especially mm-hmm. one that back in those days it was seen as something weird that you were going to die of. So I'm really sympathetic to him and his very early death at the age of 42 from, it was a heart failure from complications with diabetes, right? As far as I remember.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, I think that speaks to some of the stresses of being an actor and trying to manage this condition.
Yeah, we'll speak more of that once we...
We'll do, yeah.
In the future. Yeah. But going back to Carnival of Monsters, he's very straight-laced. He's very, by the book, presentation of the John Andrews character. It's almost as if he's playing a stereotype. I wonder, just due to the square jaw and kind of traditional looks, that those are the type of characters that he was being given in television. He was playing policemen. He was playing barristers. He was playing naval characters. And he was up for with Mike Yates as a kind of more regular army.
As an officer. Yeah, yeah. Regular army. I mean, I think, you know, he obviously wasn't posh. Pretty solid middle, maybe lower middle class. But, you know, he'd been at Oxford for 3 years, so he'd obviously had a chance to study posh, and he could certainly play posh if needed. And mm-hmm. his looks are interesting. It can skew to being kind of square-jawed, and I think Harry Sullivan, when we come to that, you know, I think was presented as a kind of John Buchan-style, kind of swashbuckling, you know, man of action, and again, kind of upper-middle-class, upper-class character. But mm-hmm. the police characters, I mean, we haven't covered the Medusa touch yet with Richard Burton, where he has a walk-on part.
That was in 76, I think, right? Or 77?
76, yeah. And obviously, you know, as in Fives, where he has a walk-on part as a policeman, he can also play kind of tough as well. And I think his looks kind of skew both ways. It can be kind of square-jawed, John Buchan, Bulldog Drummond kind of character, but that kind of underlying, slightly kind of brutal nature of his features can also allow him to do kind of police characters as well. And I think actually, I think he was probably more of a flexible actor than Doctor Who would have him be. I mean, I think we think of him as Harry Sullivan and as Harry Sullivan only, but I think he could do more than one kind of character. And again, it's interesting that in Crown Court, he started out as a policeman, which is mm-hmm. the kind of lowest level of acting in Crown Court, but then graduated to being a QC, Queen's Counsel, which is, you know, the highest level of acting in Crown Court.
And a regular.
And so he could do both. And mm-hmm. I think that speaks to his expertise and flexibility as an actor.
The early 70s is probably his the high point of his career, at least if we're going by IMDb. Now, unfortunately for armchair researching, free available sources for the theater, English British theater, are not available. So we don't really know, you know, this is more of a Toby Hato career. Yeah. We really don't know what he was doing in theaters other than through tangential bits. But I would imagine he's doing something in rep or doing something in a play, because two or three television appearances a year, I don't think are enough to support a family.
No, he was. I mean, and again, I think Toby, if you're listening, as I'm sure you are, maybe you can help us out and find out exactly what Ian was up to in rep during those years, because we'd love to know. It's clear that his first love, and I think it's for a lot of our favorite actors in Doctor Who, their first love was the theater. And I think it's sometimes hard for us to understand in contemporary acting world, where it's TV and movies are what acting is, how for, I think, the vast majority of the actors, it's the theater is what they like doing. Mm-hmm. Because you get the applause, which is something you love because you need validation in your life. But also, you know, you get to react to an audience. You get to change the part each night according to the reaction that you're getting from an audience, be that laughter or be that horror or be that concern, which is something you don't get, you know, a single piece of acting you do for TV or movies. And you also on the stage, you get to act big. And if you don't want to be subtle, you don't have to be subtle in the theater. And it's always kind of interesting to me that, you know, we prioritize film and TV over theatre and contemporary culture, when it's actually for actors, it's the other way around. You know, it's Alex Kingston going to Stratford and being the first female Prospero in
The Tempest.
The Tempest, that's it. You know, it's Alex Kingston. Yeah. Like, why isn't she back on ER, whatever she started? Why is she doing Shakespeare? It's because they like to do that. It's one of the things I like. I'd be really interested to see whether Ian ever did any Shakespeare. I mean, it's certainly possible that that's not something he was particularly interested in. Certainly looking at his...
Actually, I do have a little anecdote. Oh, okay. From when he was doing conventions, he said he never wanted to do Hamlet. It just didn't have any interest for him. This is in the early 80s, before he passed in 86. Early stages of conventions in the States.
Right.
I can see if I can dig that. That was on Doctor Who Podshock, which was an early Doctor Who podcast.
Interesting. Because, I mean, it's clear with your researches, the opportunity to do Shakespeare 3 years doing English literature at Oxford, he didn't take that opportunity at all. He was not in Shakespeare.
Right.
And it's clear to me from looking at that, you know, he was far more interested in contemporary drama. And I think, again, it would be really fascinating to find out what contemporary drama he was doing in the 70s that was making him money, or enough money to support his family. I mean, maybe, I'm sure his wife was working as well.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah. So,
So how do you think it would have been different if he did get cast, or how Doctor Who would have been different if Ian Martyr became Mike Yates?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, as much as we love Richard Franklin, I mean, Richard Franklin is a very unusual person. I mean, I don't want to speak ill of the dead, but he always seemed to me to be kind of an unusual person. I think Ian Martyr was an unusual person. I think he had a hard and difficult life in some ways. And I think Yates was a kind of a milquetoast figure in some ways. That's how I always saw him as a kid. You know, he's kind of wishy-washy. I didn't really, you know, again, the character was supposed to be in some kind of relationship with Joe that never really kind of happened, dramatically speaking. And actually what happened is that the Joe character was kind of a much more in a relationship with the Doctor than anyone else. I think the Yates arc through Green Death, Invasion of the Dinosaurs to Planet of the Spiders is absolutely an astounding arc for that period of kids' television. And I think Richard Franklin did an excellent job. And I think, you know, the kind of inherent weakness that he portrayed as the character kind of fits that arc very well. Whether that would have been possible with someone who has a more of a kind of a strength to him, like Ian Martyr, I don't know. I think it would have been very different. And I think actually what people would have written for the character, as much as people were writing for a character in Doctor Who, you know, they were trying to churning it out week by week, I think it would have been different. I think it would have been very different.
I think so, too. And I wonder if Ian Martyr would have played more of a romantic lead, if that would have been more plausible.
Yeah.
Because Richard Franklin was 8 years senior to Ian Martyr, and he is also an Oxford grad. He went to, if we can trust Wikipedia, he read for modern history at Christchurch.
Oh, Christchurch. Posh. Goodness. Wow. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Christchurch is the very, very poshest college of all.
So it says, Franklin was educated at Westminster
School. Oh, he went to Westminster. PPE. Okay, right, yeah.
Was educated at Westminster and read PPE before going to complete an MA in modern history at Christchurch.
Wow, so he was not only posh, but he was also smart.
Yeah, politics, philosophy, and economics.
Yeah, though actually, I mean, PPE is kind of the one. PPE is the one you read if you want to be a politician. is what PPE is, not if you want to be an actor.
Didn't he stand for parliament?
Well, he did for various weird kind of anti-EU candidates. Yeah, exactly. So I think a very different Oxford experience to Ian's. Franklin was at Oxford to do the Oxford thing. Mm-hmm. I really get the impression that Ian Martyr really didn't want to be at Oxford at all.
Reading between the lines, it does seem potential, yes.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously got stuff from it and was able to produce the kind of drama that he was interested in, which, you know, he wouldn't have been able to do if he'd gone to some other university.
And looking down the line, his writing is phenomenal. He's one of the best Doctor Who novelizers, and he started making head roads into just general movie novelizations. So he is a solid writer.
Absolutely. And I think, again, our discoveries about the college that he studied at and what he studied, English literature, and the kind of plays that he was in, contemporary plays about kind of real issues, informs, I think, his writing, his novelizations of which obviously we'll come to in this series, pretty hard hitting. Mm-hmm. I've not read his novelization of Splash, for instance.
I have not either.
It's
but
probably not quite as violent and as gritty as the Suntaran Experiment. Maybe it is.
Gritty story about a mermaid.
About a mermaid and Tom Hanks. I wonder whether it's possible to get a copy of that quickly and read it before we record a podcast. I don't know. That'd be kind of funny to do. Actually. Now, because I didn't know. I didn't know he novelized Splash and various other kind of silly mm-hmm. Hollywood movies. Anyway,
Yeah. So, I think the character would have developed entirely different. And my gut feeling is they would have tried to play up the more romantic, because they're more age matched between Katie Mary.
They are more age matched, and
he would have gotten fisticuffs with Bill Filer.
A lot more physical and a lot more jumping around and doing action things. And you wouldn't even need a Bill Filer, because you've got action packed Mike Yates, who's kind mm-hmm. of the action one.
Richard Franklin did have his share of action, but he just was more convincing as an officer rather than a man of action.
Richard Franklin doing Mike Yates always reminded me of John Le Mesurier doing Sergeant Wilson in Dad's Army.
Yeah.
The kind of effete upper class, if you know a bit about the British Army, there is the slang for officer is a Rupert. And your officers are effete layabouts who don't do any work. And that's always the kind of, and they're posh, hence Rupert. Mm-hmm.
And Franklin's very posh.
he's very posh, and he always seemed to me to be like Sergeant Wilson. And of course, the humorous thing about Dad's Army is that the poshest, upper classist person in the Warmington on Sea platoon is only the sergeant. And the humor that John Le Mesurier brings to that role is that he's really sees himself as being really not having to try that hard, because being a sergeant in the Home Guard is something that is way beneath him. And the kind of class conflict between upper class Sergeant Wilson and lower middle class Captain Mannering is part of the key humor of that sitcom. It's a class struggle in Marxist terms. Or something. I don't know. Anyway,
yeah.
Sorry, that's a bit for our forthcoming Dad's Army podcast that we're going to be doing.
Our spin-off
podcast, yeah, exactly.
It'll join The Good Life.
It'll join the other spin-off, which is The Good Life podcast.
Yeah. All right. Well,
goodness.
I think that kind of brings Ian Martyr up into where we're going to pick up next time with Robot. And basically filming in 1974, but the year of 1975 of Ian Martyr's life, where he played Harry Sullivan.
Right.
And regular work, nice if you can get it.
Nice work if you can get it, exactly. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to episode 254 of the Metabulous 2 podcast. I have been looking through the back issues of St. Edmund's Hall magazine with Ben.
And I have been remembering the time that I read Hadrian the VII by accident when I was at Oxford University with David.
Until next time.
Farewell. Yeah, you're like your Hobie Tadok is your.
Yeah, there we go.
You're like the exactly. You're the dollar store. The dollar store Toby Haddock.
Hobie Tadok, yeah.
Hobie Tadok. Oh, excellent.